Hi, welcome aboard. Thank you for tuning in. Glad you're with us now more than ever. It's the Sean Hannity Show. Yeah, I got it, Rachel. Thank you. 76 days to go now and until Election Day, and I think one of the most important elections we'll have in our lifetime. And joining us on our newsmaker line is our national security advisor, good friend of this program, Condoleezza Rice. How are you, Dr. Rice?
I'm great. How are you, Sean?
I'm good. Now, all your friends say, hey, I heard John Hannity's program.
They do.
Oh, they do not. I hope. Now, you
keep... A lot of them do, Sean. They do. They
hear it. Hey, are you coming to New York for the convention, or are you staying back in D.C.?
I'll just come with the president when he comes to the convention. I won't go to the convention, and I'm going to miss it because I was a delegate last time from the state of California. It was great fun, but this time I'll just come with the president.
You're just going to come, and you'll be hanging. You'll be going to all the big parties and hanging around.
No. I'm afraid I'll be back working on matters like intel reform and so forth.
Now, look, you're doing great work to help keep us safe in these very difficult times. All right, before I get to, I promised a caller that I'd ask you this question, and I'm going to fulfill my promise. Will you ever consider running for office yourself?
Sean, I cannot imagine that. I have great respect for people who run for office. I don't really see myself in that role. I love the kind of thing I'm doing, but I'll tell you, it's good that we have such good people who will, but I don't think I'm one of them.
Well, I think you'd be great.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. I'll donate the maximum if you decide to run. All right, let's talk a little bit about your speech and some of the things you've been out there and the president has been proposing here. Obviously, transforming our military and the transfer over the next 10 years, the president's plan, which would close some U.S. facilities overseas, bring home about 60,000 to 70,000 uniformed personnel and family members and civilian employees. Tell us about the change.
Well, the important point here, Sean, is that even before he became president, the president was recognized that we still had a kind of Cold War force posture and that we needed to transform our forces to make them more light and mobile and still lethal. But, of course, after September 11th, this became even clearer. And we just can't live any longer with a force posture that looks like it's waiting for the Warsaw Pact, the old Soviet alliance, to attack, when, of course, now most of the members of the Warsaw Pact are members of NATO. The world has changed. The world has changed on the Korean Peninsula, where even though we continue to have the threat from Kim Jong-il, we, of course, have a very strong deterrent, stronger South Korean forces, and where we are going to improve our capabilities by improving our technological sophistication, by improving our sea and air capabilities there. It was high time that somebody transformed this Cold War force posture into one that is prepared to meet the threats of the 21st century.
It seems whatever the president does right now, we are in a political season. He is being accused of making these moves for political purposes. For example, when we raised the threat level, well, I guess about a week and a half ago over the weekend, Howard Dean, a surrogate for John Kerry, goes out and says that there were political considerations to this. Similarly, statements were made by John Kerry today that this was, quote, political. But in reality, isn't this something that has been in the works for, what, 3 years now?
Oh, this has been in the works for a very long time. In fact, we've been talking to our allies about this for over a year, in which we've been talking about the need to change you in NATO. There have been long discussions about the need to transform the alliance. And, I know there are some who said this is going to hurt our alliances. I note that the NATO spokesman came out today and said, well, this is actually very much in line with what NATO is doing. And so this has been underway for a long time. Don Rumsfeld and the combatant commanders who really were the source of this plan, the combatant commanders, this has been going on for at least 3 years.
Yeah, okay. And for example, what do we need so many troops in Germany for right now?
Well, it's time to bring home those forces that we can bring home. We don't need two heavy divisions sitting in Germany, you know, defending the inner German border, which doesn't exist anymore since Germany is unified.
Yeah.
Those forces can be home with their families. And we can also close a lot of facilities that are no longer needed. And, Sean, we're not the only people doing this. A lot of our allies are consolidating facilities and moving from what's called territorial defense, where you sat there and waited for the Soviet Union to come across the German border, to forces that are mobile and light. Another thing that the president has in this global posture review is that we're developing new relationships with places like Uzbekistan, where we learned at the time of the Afghan war that it wasn't a question of could we get our heavy divisions out of Germany. It was a question of where were they going to go. We needed to be able to base forces in Uzbekistan. So we're also working for new relationships with some of the Central European countries, some of the Central Asian countries, And we've had long discussions with all of our allies, and by the way, even with the Russians about what we're doing.
You know, the president spoke at length about taking advantage of 21st century military technologies and increasing U.S. military capabilities to combat power in every part of the world and improving cooperation, and I think that's a big part. Are we getting to the point, Dr. Rice, and Condoleezza Rice joins us, our National Security Advisor, are we getting to the point where future wars will be technological wars, where we will be less inclined to put troops, human beings, in harm's way?
Well, that's always been a vision that everybody would love to see, where wars are fought by technology. But this president understands that wars are fought by people, and that the men and women in uniform, no matter how sophisticated the technology, it's the men and women in uniform that are the heart and soul of being able to defend America. And that's why the president has placed such a premium on making their lives better. I was just out recently looking at some new housing. The president came in with a real concern for housing for our forces, substandard housing that had been there for a long time. The president in this global posture review is concerned to give families more stability and people more time on the home front. So, yes, the technology is getting better. Hopefully that technology can help save lives, but it still comes down to the men and women in the uniform.
Roland Scarborough, who is a terrific reporter for the Washington Times, had a piece earlier this week where he reports that Saddam Hussein periodically would remove guards on the Syrian border and replace them with his own intelligence agents who supervised the movement of banned materials between the two countries. Investigators have discovered just recently that the Iraq Survey Group that the Iraqi dictator moved these prohibited weapons and WMDs into Syria before the March 2003 invasion. This seems to me the more likely scenario than the conventional wisdom that's out there today, is that he didn't have them, that our intelligence was wrong. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is certainly a scenario that has to be looked into. I think we don't still have clarity about what role Syria may have played in the movement of weapons one way or another before the war, but it's certainly something that is worth clarifying. But even on the weapons of mass destruction issue, Sean, I just remind people that, you know, it's fallen over to the other side now. He didn't have weapons. He wasn't a weapons of mass destruction threat. Of course he was. He'd used weapons of mass destruction. He knew how to build them. He was maintaining the infrastructure. At best, he was waiting until the sanctions were off so that he could fully resume his programs, and we couldn't tolerate that.
Let me ask you another question related to Saddam. I know in June the Energy Department had announced that it had removed 1.8 tons of low-enriched uranium from Saddam's former nuclear weapons research lab near Baghdad. You're aware of that, correct?
Yes, Doisa, yes.
Now, does that mean that Saddam at some point had the capacity to enrich uranium? And if so, when did he do the enriching, before or after the first Gulf War?
Well, we believe that before the Gulf War, he had a not only active, but probably pretty close to successful nuclear program. In fact, a lot of that enriched uranium comes from that period. But also, what we know is that he had a lot of very sophisticated designs for nuclear weapons. He had the scientific knowledge, and many people now say that he was a year or maybe a little bit more away from having a crude nuclear weapon when the Gulf War I took place. So the point that we really have to underscore is that this is a country that had sophisticated technology and sophisticated know-how, and much of making weapons of mass destruction is know-how.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about what's going on in Iraq right now. And, of course, we have this radical Shiite cleric al-Sadr, who just today agreed to withdraw fighters in Najaf after Iraqi officials gave him and the militia an ultimatum to lay down their arms before they would storm this mosque. In a case like that, is it justifiable in your estimation to go into a mosque and even engage in battle in a mosque if this is where somebody like al-Sadr is hiding out?
Well, the Iraqi government has made very clear that using the mosque in this way is unacceptable to them. And I think the Shia community has been saying that and telling Sadr that he has to get out of the mosque, where he probably has even rigged the mosque with a lot of explosives, so, you know, hoping to do damage to it and then blame us. So he's not using the mosque mosque as a religious person. He's using it as a place from which to fight a war, and that's just not acceptable. But let me just say, nobody's going to accept on face value what Sadr says. He said many times that he was going to get out of the mosque or he was going to disband his militia. I think the Iraqi government will wait to see what he does. It's going to wait to see if there are any deeds to follow these words.
National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice on our Newsmaker line. That we have this ongoing battle with Iran going on right now, part of the Axis of Evil, and their recent statements about being able to reach Israel, the ongoing battle with the IAEA. How dangerous is that situation? I mean, do you believe they have nuclear capability? Do you believe they're capable of using it?
Well, I believe that the Iranians are a real security concern, a real security problem for us. And we, the United States, has been saying that for some time. This president, as you said, made it clear in his State of the Union speech. What is happening, though, is that the rest of the world is starting to come to the same conclusion. And so you're getting people less willing to cooperate with the Iranians. You've had very tough language from the so-called European three, the British, the Germans, and the French. And I think the IAEA realizes that the Iranians are not living up to their obligations. How far along they are in trying to acquire nuclear capability, I think we don't know. One is always concerned that times could be shorter than one thinks, and that's why it's important that the international community band together to say to the Iranians, there are only two routes here, isolation from the international community or observing their international obligations.
All right, so what is the likelihood you're staying for a second term?
Sean, I'm just trying to get through the next few days.
I'm just trying to sneak that in.
I know. We'll cross those bridges when we come to it.
Well, I'd love to see you run for office. I didn't even think one day I could see you running for president.
Well, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. But as you know, my great goal in life is that when Paul Tagliabue steps down, and I want to be clear, when.
You want that job?
I want that job.
All right, you'd be good at that, too. All right, Condoleezza Rice. Dr. Rice, thank you for being with us.